The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. This program will take you behind the scenes and deepen your understanding about the patterns and perspectives of leadership today. Now, here's your host, John Schmidt.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome again to this week's edition of Zoomed Leadership. I am your host, John Schmidt, and again today, as every week, I'll be helping to take us out to the big picture, into the up close and personal, and toward a world of desirable futures, those rich, of course, with the essence of constant renewal. Well, it is a pleasure to be back. I am continuing to broadcast this week from the Monterey Peninsula of California, still here only steps away from the Pacific Ocean. We've had a brilliant week, actually blue skies, always shimmering blue-green waves and cool breezes, and I must say we have had sun about half the time. The other half, it seems like we have been socked in by fog and mist, which frankly has felt a lot like the financial crisis of not that long ago. And you may know that socked in feeling, perhaps here where you've been, and then in the financial crisis, that sense of confinement, perhaps constraint, tendency to an inward focus. That, I think, is part of our conversation. Today, we are all about the financial crisis. That is our terrain of emphasis, and perhaps freshly today, we really want to be pointing even more to how do liberals, conservatives, and radicals all contribute to the world we have been experiencing and living in relative to the crisis. And as you may have recognized by now, we take a transpartisan view here on Zoomed, and today, really, we hope to really continue pointing and painting a picture of what might really be going on in our complex and multidimensional world. 3 weeks ago, as we broadcast out here from San Francisco at the Integral Theory Conference, I was fortunate enough to get connected with our guest today, Dr. Kevin J. Bowman, Assistant Professor of Economics at Augsburg College in Minneapolis. Dr. Bowman joined me on a financial panel, as you recall that I did mention, and through that panel and an array of readings since, I have become familiar with his good work and the thought that he brings to the table. I think he's going to be a great addition and fit with our Zoom conversation, and as always, one that blends on-the-ground realities and practical perspectives with those grounded in an integral view. By way of further introduction, Kevin, Dr. Bowman, teaches macroeconomics, international economics, and economic growth. He's a researcher in integral studies and has dynamically extended Ken Wilber's philosophical model of overall development, that which we talk about periodically here on Zoom, and he has corrected for some of the biases pointed out by other researchers as well. He's widely published, including such journals as The Economics of Innovation, New Technology, The Journal of Integral Theory and Practice, and he has developed a unique explanation for the financial crisis we have just been through in 2008 and 2009, and as it may continue, part of which we'll talk about today, including emphasis on one of his works, Integral Political Economy. That is the title of our show, and ultimately today, I hope we can begin to see how some varying types and levels of maturity of liberals, conservatives, and radicals have all contributed to the tensions, the misunderstandings, and ultimately to the results we have realized in this financial upheaval. So, Kevin, let's start. Welcome. Great to have you here with us today. It's a delighted to continue the conversation from the conference.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I'm pleased to talk about this with you, John.
Well, yes, absolutely. And maybe we can start, Kevin, personally, your sense. I know you've done a great job, and when we've been talking about it at the panel, certainly in your writings, about three apparently irreconcilable views of the financial crisis. Maybe you can kick us off in that direction today.
Sure, sure. Well, there are some very wise and educated opinions out there, but it's very hard to hear them. And we'll talk about sort of the cultural component that makes it hard to sift through the divides that we have out there. So let's just start out then by looking at late 2008, early 2009, during the bleakest period of the financial crisis. We really saw this event bringing out some ideological stubbornness in even PhD economists, you know, not just analysts, but PhD prominent economists. Let's start with conservative Stan Liebowitz, who said that the greatest scandal of the mortgage crisis is that it's a direct result of the intentional loosening of underwriting standards by the government done in the name of ending discrimination, despite warnings that it could lead to wide-scale defaults. Mm-hmm. Okay, so essentially it's the liberals' fault and it's government intervention. Paul Krugman, I'm sure many of you know, the Nobel Prize-winning economist, has a blog in New York Times, calls himself a liberal. And he wrote in 2008 that the crisis was similar to a Ponzi scam, and that the real estate bubble and the crisis was the fault of dramatically loosening lending standards by banks in response to deregulation, which had nothing to do with the government encouraging risky loans. So essentially, it's the conservatives' fault. It's deregulation's free market ideology. And then from the radical perspective, Rick Wolf in 2009, crises are inevitable, recurring events that are associated with the capitalist system. Government policies over the last two centuries of capitalism's ascendancy have neither ended nor replaced crises as a system's method for correcting capitalist excesses. So it's the fault of the capitalist system, right? We need a radical overhaul.
Well, so, Kevin, that strikes me as you're really describing those, and I remember some of those myself, that there's sort of a boundary around that that provides a context of a sole realm of explanation for that creates somewhat of a divide at the same time. Is that sort of what you're feeling into that as well?
Right. This is the economy and the financial crisis are very complex things, and it's only possible to enact or discover a portion of it based on our limited understanding. And the only way that we can access an event is through our own lens, and the lens that we have is created by our experiences, our incentives, our upbringing, our family, our associations. And it just happens to be that this is a very polarized, you know, public policy making around economic decisions is a highly polarized subject. Not all subjects are polarizing, but this one in particular is, and therefore it's hard to see a balanced view.
And it strikes me that what's actually happening in this polarization, that the value of the private sector and the value of the public sector and a both and of that is not necessarily on the table. It's one or the other. I'm hearing you describe the conservatives pushing away the value of the government, likewise pushing away the value of the private. Is that some of the intersection you're describing out of that as well?
That's right. So if we just open up any principles of economics textbook, the presentation might be biased, but essentially there are these elements in our fundamental College 101 understanding of economics, that there's a value of private markets, but there are specific ways that they fail. And there are, therefore, things that we need to do to correct those failures through government intervention or some other collective means. But when we try to do that, there are also specific ways that the government fails. So, I mean, we don't have time to talk about these specifically, but it's important to maybe just list a few just so we have some understanding of that they're out there and we can go research them. The market has a hard budget constraint. It has to keep resources, the cost of resources down and efficiently use them. There's an incentive, the profit incentive is a means to come up with new innovations and provide services to our customers in new ways and better ways. But there are these specific failures like externalities or borrowing constraints for education, or inattention to aggregate risk when individual firms behave. There's anti-competitive consolidation. There's rent-seeking for special treatment by the government. So the government has a role to to deal with these externalities and provide public goods, monitor inflation, educate, provide some antitrust regulation and deposit insurance and things like that. But when they do intervene, there are specific ways that they fail, like through special interest persuasion, log rolling, the moral hazard problem, pandering populism, imperfect understanding of the economy, and a soft budget constraint.
So value in both public and private sector, I'm hearing, some contributions and some potential limitations, but that really shows still that there's value on both sides and considerations. You're painting the picture to me of perhaps a more complex view, a more complex understanding, certainly a recognition of that. And I know we talked a little bit about this in some of your papers. You're really pointing to the nature of the conservatives, the liberals, the radicals that in some respects may not actually have the most complex view always. Maybe you can begin to introduce us to that. We've got a couple of minutes only left here in this first segment, but get us started, Kevin, because I think this is a very interesting contribution to this whole dialogue.
Okay, so, well, I'm proposing that political economic understanding is a learning line of development.
Mm-hmm.
So we might be very developed in engineering and just not have studied these issues, and so we're less developed in this area. But when we build a bridge, we ask an expert engineer, right? But when we have public policy around economic decisions, you know, it's important that the average consumer and voter and politician are educated on these things, or that we encourage expert understanding through theory and evidence. The conservatives generally, you know, look at the value of markets and the failure of government. Liberals tend to look at the value of the government and the failures of the private markets, and radicals tend to look at the failures of the system. So that's sort of the interaction of market and government failures.
So it's interesting, Kevin, you're really using the term line here. I think some of our new listeners most may not get necessarily what we're talking about, but it is a particular flow of development that you're oriented, that you're thinking about. And we think about, for new listeners, the development. We can think about young people grow up. We can see sort of this almost stages of development in the young as they progress from youth into the teens, into the college years and beyond. That there, but you're actually suggesting that along a line of economic or a view of political and economic development. Kevin, I can hear the music in the background, but I want to pick up on that because I think it's important. You've really brought something to bear here that's useful for us to consider in relation to the financial crisis. And folks, that's where we'll continue in just a moment. Dr. Kevin Bowman with us today. Come back in just a moment. Conversation continues. Let's make sure we understand the reality of what is going on. Come back in a second.
When it comes to business,
you'll find the experts here.
Voice America Business Network. The world is in flux, primed for a great transition, possibly an epical one. How does it impact you? Does it reshape the questions you ask? The way you view leadership? Today's complexities and challenges call for new realms of leadership. The world needs resilience and adaptability, new levels of innovation and brilliance. At Avastone Consulting, we know that our times call for shifts of mind. How do we cultivate real shifts of mind in our leaders? Not through conventional development, which focuses on gaining skills and knowledge within an established worldview. Shifts of mind truly expand the worldview itself, enlarge the capacity to see through new eyes, and transform interpretations of reality and the actions that accompany them. Those who embrace shifts of mind are the kind of leaders that Avastone helps to build. Change the way you pursue the future. Call Avastone Consulting at 1-678-461-8888. That's 1-678-461-8880. Or visit avastoneconsulting.com. Avastone Consulting, your source for leadership development, working with complex organizations toward evolutionary shifts of mind. There's a course offered on Seventh Wave Network that you never saw offered in college. One that provides information on how to transform ancient wisdom teachings into everyday life. You'll learn how to create from your spirit and explore the world with all of your senses. Participation is encouraged. Enroll in Spirituality 101, the course you can't afford to miss, with your host, Reverend Norma. Classes in session every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Pacific Time, in your favorite classroom, Seventh Wave Network.
It's All Arizona
all over the world.
If you're a local Arizona high school sports fan, or if you're a transplanted fan somewhere else in the world, have we got a show for you. The first internet sports radio talk show focusing solely on high school sports is The Coach's Corner with Scott Lovely. Tune in to talk about your favorite teams, players, or coaches. It's 100% Arizona high school sports coverage and a little bit more. Tune in Mondays at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern, to the Voice America Sports Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, back again today. Show title today, Integral Political Economy. Our guest, Dr. Kevin Bowman, Assistant Professor of Economics at Augsburg College. Our focus is really understanding the political situation, the financial crisis from a political underpinning, the liberals, the conservatives, the radicals, all these contributions. And Kevin, we left the conversation talking about a developmental view and some of the polarities that you're describing that come out. We pointed to the nature of a line of development, or a line and a type here. Maybe you can say some more about that. We've introduced the notion of the line and the way that conservatives, the liberals, and radicals might view, but there's a developmental context. Maybe you can describe that a little bit more for us.
Sure. So the there's these three types, so that means like personality types. We can be introverted or extroverted, but it doesn't mean that introverted folks are more or less developed than extroverted folks. So those are separate things, types versus levels development. So I'm arguing that these types, conservative, liberal, and radical, can have, each of them can have less or more developed expressions. And that's important because conservatives generally think that they're more developed than liberals, and liberals think they're more developed or more informed than conservatives, and that sort of thing. So in theory, what I'm saying is that immature agents, whatever type they are, only recognize those two realms that they focus on. So immature conservatives only acknowledge the value of markets and the failures of government. Immature liberals, the opposite.
In a very narrow way, then, is what you're describing.
Very extreme, not a whole lot of reference to, latest studies and that sort of thing. But the more sophisticated agents, they recognize, they acknowledge all four areas, so the value and the failure of both public and private sectors, but they're going to emphasize their preferred area, and that's appropriate. It's appropriate to have typologies. So the more sophisticated are kind of the agents we sort of want to empower. But it's appropriate to be immature. We would like to recognize that there are more mature expressions out there.
Well, so I think it's an interesting way to begin to think about this, that it's less mature or more sophisticated. There's a continuum here. And maybe, Kevin, can you bring some examples here of maybe conservatives, liberals, in particular here, to understand the more the less mature forms of that, and the way that might play out in what we're looking at.
Yeah. So as soon as we make examples, it kind of brings out some defenses and maybe subjects me to criticism. But it's necessary to take a stab at this and kind of think, are these statements or these behaviors really helpful or supported by theory and evidence? So just an example, if you're only going to believe in the value of markets and the failure of governments as an immature conservative or less developed conservative, you might make these extreme claims like we always have to deregulate, taxes should always be cut, there's no role for government except for maybe protecting our private property. And if you look at the immature liberal, since there's no theory telling us what is valuable about the market or not, then there might be some extreme statements like, we need to fix prices to help the poor with no regard to the unintended consequences that has in the market. The profit incentive is always the problem. There's no acknowledgement of government failures. The government has to fix the problem, and as long as we tell them to fix the problem, they will fix the problem. And then the less developed radical view, since they're focusing on the negative aspects of the whole system, they're going to they're not going to honor the partial value of these of this mixed system. So they're prone to have simple panaceas, communism. The state takes over entirely, or just the opposite, anarchy, where we have no hierarchical decision-making. So they might advocate complete revolution, right? So this is a very extreme view as well.
So this strikes me that although these are different orientations, there's a different type, there's an underpinning to the liberals, the Democrats, conservatives, the radicals, but there's a similarity here in that there's they're all really in this less mature space, orienting to more of a polarity of versus that. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. We want to honor the partial truth of them, you know, because it's important to value the market for the immature conservative. So we want to honor that and resonate with that, but then act as a role model as a sophisticated conservative and, you know, say, well, there are some things that go wrong. I mean, this is sort of something we could talk about. So there's, yeah, there's similarities across the types in the extreme nature of the immature views, but there's a certain path that we might want to take and try to maturing the debate.
So that's interesting. So I guess the question comes to me then to, as we've talked about in some other realms here on Zoom, that there is this developmental fashion that opens our ability to see and embrace more complexity and more of a whole and of the whole, whether it's society or whether it's segments of society or looking at the economic and financial system. Is there a way here, and is there a form that this more sophisticated, maybe we start there first, Kevin, with the way this more sophisticated view actually looks, and then we can back up a little bit about how we get there and start to bridge a little bit to, from where we are with less mature to more mature. But can you give us a sense of what this more sophisticated view might look like across all three?
Well, yeah, there's more of a sense of wanting to get it right rather than being right. There's a higher level of maturity, not just in our part of it's our cognitive understanding. It's our ability to sort of, this is a complex problem, the economy and the financial crisis. So partially it's just a cognitive ability, but it's also a willingness to be open to understanding. And so that openness of wanting to understand and the ego being willing to change its view is really essential. So it's cognitive and moral and value development is sort of a necessary but insufficient precondition for development in the line of political economic understanding.
So what's the contribution here? Where is it, and how do we really make that bridge then between the less mature and the more sophisticated?
Well, we need to pay attention to theory and evidence and try to decipher better outlets for those for more sophisticated understanding. So maybe we could should we do a couple examples of the sophisticated?
That would be very helpful to get some kind of a sense of really how do we actually make that bridge. And what I hear you saying, which theory and practice and data and what's happening, sounds to me like at the same time you're appealing to where people are, even in a less mature way. But let's get some pictures on the table. That'd be helpful for
us. Well, yeah, we'll come back to sort of specifically dealing with a more healthier expression of the lower levels later. But here, let's just talk about some examples here, the sophisticated variety. Thankfully, there are more sophisticated views, conservative, liberal, and radical. The sophisticated conservative are going to just emphasize how markets are efficient allocators of resources, but that there are some failures that exist. But the problem is that governments often make matters worse if they don't have appreciation of how those policies are going to affect the market. So they are open to the proper government intervention. They're just sort of suspicious that will actually happen. Liberals, sophisticated liberals, they're going to sort of, we have to deal with these market failures. And global warming, it's a major negative externality. We have to deal with them. But they'll acknowledge that sometimes the government has gotten it wrong in the past, so we have to get it right, and development requires sound public corrective measures, and we have to understand how they can affect what we're interested in, with the open to recognizing if they aren't working. And then a sophisticated radical, generally these sophisticated radicals have a keen understanding of the elite interests at play here. So the business leaders giving enormous contributions to campaigns of politicians, and there's these short-term benefits to these elite being in bed together, and that it's a systemic problem, right? And that we need a healthier system. We need a more developed system. So, but that requires a co-created evolution of various aspects, the private and public sector. They won't put the full blame on the elite. They'll understand that to start, average consumer, average voter also plays a part. We'll talk more about that maybe later.
So what I'm hearing is a real, much more of an integration, much more of a recognition of interest, much more of coming to the table with an assembly of the different views and perspectives and adding that into the mix. And I'm curious, Kevin, because it feels like this is not where we are, that we're very polarized
right
here. And I'm wondering what's actually happening. You use the term fallacy. There's something we have to understand here. Maybe you, before we take a break here, you can give us a sense of where we're getting log-jammed.
Yeah. Well, I can give you an example of it where, the theory and evidence supports these sophisticated views. And the sophisticated views are reconcilable. If you get a sophisticated conservative, liberal, and radical together, then they can come up with a better outcome. They might not all be thrilled, but they'll have a better outcome. And so, what happens then? Well, we have this fallacy that keeps cropping up. When we hear a sophisticated argument, we translate that into a less mature understanding. So take a sophisticated conservative who says that, you know, I'm worried that the government is going to intervene and create more problems. Okay, an immature liberal might just interpret that as, well, that's just... You're just a selfish, wealthy person who's defending the privileged business class. You're part of the problem, right? So this is actually a reduction of a sophisticated conservative to an immature conservative by someone of another type.
Okay, so that's where I want to pick up on. I can hear the music starting to come back into my ears here, Kevin, but what you're really pointing to is we have a lens from which we're looking at the world, and even the more sophisticated views that are coming out, we're packaging them, we're looking at them in a more narrow view. That's part of the conversation, and that's part of the implication we want to take a further look at. But take a break here, folks. We'll be back with Dr. Kevin Bowman. Our conversation continues. Types, levels of maturity, what the impact of that, the unrecognized fallacy, what's the implication, what do we do about it? Come back in a minute here on Zoom. Thanks.
Stocks, bonds, investment opportunities, financial news, and talk. We can help. Call us now toll-free, 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network. The world is in flux, primed for a great transition, possibly an epical one. How does it impact you? Does it reshape the questions you ask? The way you view leadership. Today's complexities and challenges call for new realms of leadership. The world needs resilience and adaptability, new levels of innovation and brilliance. At Avastone Consulting, we know that our times call for shifts of mind. How do we cultivate real shifts of mind in our leaders? Not through conventional development, which focuses on gaining skills and knowledge within an established worldview. Shifts of mind truly expand the worldview itself, enlarge the capacity to see through new eyes, and transform interpretations of reality and the actions that accompany them. Those who embrace shifts of mind are the kind of leaders that Avastone helps to build. Change the way you pursue the future. Call Avastone Consulting at 1-678-461-8888. That's 1-678-461-8880. Or visit avastoneconsulting.com. Avastone Consulting, your source for leadership development, working with complex organizations toward evolutionary shifts of mind.
It's football, pop culture, and everything in between. Get ready for The Game Plan with Anthony Herron, a.k.a. Big Ant. Anthony has a background in college and professional football and brings the player, coach, and broadcaster perspective to this weekly roundup of the top sports news and events. Big Ant wants to hear from you, too. Tune in to The Game Plan with Anthony Herron every Tuesday afternoon at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Sports Channel. It's game time.
These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's AVASTONE consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, third segment today, Dr. Kevin Bowman, our guest. We are talking about integral political economy. We're talking about the financial crisis, the underpinnings to this from several viewpoints. And, Kevin, we were talking more about the fallacy here, about people tend to, even with more complex, sophisticated offerings and alternatives that are put on the table, frame them. Can you give us some examples and how that might actually look in the realms we're talking about?
Yeah, sure. So, well, maybe we should also mention that if you look at the scholarly literature, that the liberals, conservatives, and radicals, they all have some useful points to make, and then maybe that can be examples of how we would reduce those views to less mature.
Yeah, great. That's a good, helpful start.
So, I mean, if you look at Immergluck, 2009, Lewis, 2009, Albers, 2009, deregulation and consolidation of the banking industry was a major part of the crisis. Certainly, deregulation, the neoliberal paradigm, or what, you know, it's a conservative paradigm of major emphasis on the private market. I mean, that was a major problem. But, you know, why was this move so influential? In part, it was because the liberals didn't provide a coherent alternative based on sound evidence and theory. So, you know, that was a problem, but also the government did intervene in ways that were problematic. So they did legislate through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to weaken their lending laws so people couldn't afford their homes that way. The loose monetary policy was a major problem. The government was printing much too much money. We had negative interest rates in 2003 and 2004, well into the recovery after the 2001 recession. That encouraged leveraging by banks. So the government and the private sector was partly at fault. And so if we're going to counter this deregulation, we have to talk about sound ways to regulate and sound ways to get it done through regulators. So as an example of a fallacy, if a sophisticated liberal is going to say, you know, we need to regulate a market failure, this over-consolidation in the banks, or this anything-goes kind of lending, the immature conservative is just focusing on the other issue. The government got it wrong through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and they're going to say, well, this intervention is ignorant encroachment on the freedom and the right to pursue prosperity, right? Because it's never the market's fault, it's the government's fault.
So I'm hearing a black and white kind of an emphasis and an orientation. So no matter what is said out there, it's framed within this narrow, it's that narrow particular view, and I'm expressing that no matter what actually comes out. It's
right.
That's part of the fallacy, and a more complex view is then brought back and put into a less complex view as only this versus that from the political stance that it all started from.
Right, right. So in some ways, we have to change culturally, and the mature agents have to work for this. They have to work at trying to raise the health of the debate.
So, Kevin, it strikes me that this is also a means of deflecting blame here. Is that how you might see it, too?
Yes, right, right, right. So it's helpful to then think about the groups in our society, not just liberal, conservative, radical, but who's more likely to be a conservative? Well, if we're a business leader, if we're aligned with conservative interests, then our incentive is sort of, you know, if we're competing well internationally and domestically as a business, well, our incentive is not to have the government get involved and regulate us. So the major stakeholders we want to look at are business, government, party, Republican, Democrat, consumers, voters, environmental groups, that sort of thing.
So we want people to look at the stakeholders then. So how do we begin to think about bridging beyond this? I mean, what is the practicality here? I know on other shows we certainly underpin the importance in the future. We call it present-centered leadership in one sense, a deeper sense that really fuels this developmental view that we can get more quickly and more fully to more sophisticated views that take in more of the world. They're more complex. But what is the bridge here, Kevin, relative to the stakeholder groups and the passing the buck and what actually happens?
Well, we'll start with a business group. They're not making a distinction between sound regulation and overregulation. They're just saying, you know, regulation is bad. Mm-hmm. And even after the financial crisis, even when we should see that we need more regulation, that we've had obstructionism from the financial sector. Amir Gluck, Cohen, they've documented these things. Blocking just modest reform proposals. So we need a culture that says, yeah, we're going to work for the greater good, and leaders from business and with the other stakeholder groups should be maybe part of the process that is discussing sound regulation, because sound regulation is the surest defense against overregulation later when things go bad. If you look at politicians, you have McConnell, Republican, calling the climate, dealing with global warming and the climate program. He's trying to paint this as a big and efficient government program. But Pelosi, the leader, and the Democrats are going to say things like healthcare companies are immoral, right? So rather than talking about specific ways that the market fails, it's they're the problem. But, you know, radicals understand the nature of this interaction, that the elite in business and elite in the politicians sort of are maybe making these statements, but they're sort of in bed together when it comes to money influencing the decisions. So, but we also have to look at the average voter and the consumer. So, again, going back to global warming, there's, according to a poll in Slate, Americans support a binding agreement to reduce emissions, but not if it increases electricity bills. And economic theory suggests that we should be taxing these negative externalities, which raises the price of energy. When the government raised interest rates in the early 80s to defeat inflation, the Fed chairman was everyone's favorite scapegoat, according to Ullman. So, you know, these individual stakeholder groups are all sort of complicit in the cultural aspect of deflecting blame. And it's helpful to have a mature ego that actually, you know, is open to the possibility, hey, my group or my thinking might need a little changing.
So what I'm hearing here is there's a more complex solution needed, a more integrated view of this that transcends that. And we've got a lot of the polarities we've been talking about here, and the different groups are really locked into a particular view, and the stakeholder groups are reinforcing that. Another discussion could probably go into the nature of deception that's coming with this, the way things are packaged and limited in view, tried to push others off the table. But I'm curious about where this leads us in this current path, and Kevin, then how, as someone who might be a more sophisticated conservative, liberal, radical, could actually exert influence on the economic and financial political debate here. What's the sense of the through line and the flow of this?
Well, what I think is valuable is to look at agents at the level that they're at. Scientifically, what do we know about their value system, the way they think? Because, you know, it's appropriate to be immature. We can't just say you're wrong for being less developed in this area. You're busy with your own life, specializing in your own way, but you do influence policy through your actions. So we want to just encourage a healthier expression of agents at whatever level they are. A culture, healthier culture would do that. But the problem is our culture is a little, in my view, a little unhealthy at the moment. So we could look at the three major segments of our population, the traditional stage, and then the rational stage, and then the pluralistic stage. These are the three major groups represented in our society, and they're very much at odds. So do we have a minute for talking about their sorts of values?
Yeah, we do. I think we're going to be kind of coming into a break midstream on this, but I think this is a useful point because what you're really describing, more traditional, more of the fabric that's oriented to the group and the identity of the group. Rational is more of the achiever context. We've talked about that on Zoom in terms of a strive drive. Pluralistic is much more opening up some of the assumptions, the more relativistic views of this. But once you get started, Kevin, if we need to take a break, I'll kind of push it here as we hear the music coming in on us.
Sure. So, well, it's a helpful summary right there. And so the traditional stage values, they're willing to sacrifice themselves, and that can be useful, right? But it's generally in an ethnocentric way. So it's for our group or for a reward in heaven in the afterlife. So we want to just, those values can be very useful for responsible stewardship of the environment or of the financial system, right? Those are actually very useful, valuable values. The rational stage, the achiever drive, is sort of the center of gravity. This is the industrial stage, and they want to achieve. They want self-esteem, and there can be major contributors to innovations and efficiency gains, and can be strong leaders. But it shouldn't be just about earning a buck and dominating the competition. It should be providing a good service to society. And there should be a cultural demand that businesses just contribute to responsible regulation. You know, they're not going to lobby just in their own self-interest. A healthy culture would encourage that. And the relativistic agent, which is sort of a later recognition, sort of dealing with the insensitivities of the rational stage, the marginalizations of the environment, the marginalizations of less advantaged groups, their values are more about expressing themselves so that all can win. And so that can be useful, too, and we'll maybe pick up on that.
So I'm hearing we're getting some music in the background. We might have gotten drowned out on that last piece of it. But, Kevin, let's take a break, come back, maximize our time here. We'll pick up a little bit more on the relativistic, but get a sense of the flow of this and how. And what I'm hearing here is part of a conversation about translating to where people live and how to make that bridge. That's where we want to go in the last segment, at least in part of my conversation, as Kevin brings sort of the through line of his own perspective to bear. Take a short break, come back, we'll close in a minute. Thanks.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790.
The experts are here.
Voice America Business Network.
The world is in flux, primed for a great transition, possibly an epical one. How does it impact you? Does it reshape the questions you ask? The way you view leadership. Today's complexities and challenges call for new realms of leadership. The world needs resilience and adaptability, new levels of innovation and brilliance. At Avastone Consulting, we know that our times call for shifts of mind. How do we cultivate real shifts of mind in our leaders? Not through conventional development, which focuses on gaining skills and knowledge within an established worldview. Shifts of mind truly expand the worldview itself, enlarge the capacity to see through new eyes, and transform interpretations of reality and the actions that accompany them. Those who embrace shifts of mind are the kind of leaders that Avastone helps to build. Change the way you pursue the future. Call Avastone Consulting at 1-678-461-888. 1-678-4680. That's 1-678-461-8880. Or visit avastoneconsulting.com. Avastone Consulting, your source for leadership development, working with complex organizations toward evolutionary shifts of mind.
The Marsh Engel Show. Join the movement to empower yourself with the essentials of feminine power and success, and learn how women around the world are becoming more inspired, more influential, and absolutely amazing. Each week, Marsh sits down for an engaging conversation with women who are boldly committed to living their most amazing life. You'll discover ways to step into your greatest vision, deepen your relationships, and unleash your real creative brilliance. Get ready. It's time to jump into the conversation. That's Monday afternoons at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern for the Marsh Engel Show on the Voice America Business Network.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, back today, Integral Political Economy, Dr. Kevin Bowman, our conversation about the nature of the financial crisis, the developmental views and perspectives on these types, and we left with a look at the traditional, the rational. We got a little cut off, Kevin, on the relativistic, pluralistic view and what the value in that context can bring. Maybe you can bridge on that, and then let's talk about how we might think about the leaders and those agents in society bringing the bridge to bear here. But say a little bit more about that last one.
Sure. Well, the relativistic stage is very useful and appropriate for getting over the insensitivities of the previous stage. So they're really sensitive to the marginalized, sensitive to the environment, generally speaking, in their initial form. And they generally follow a strategy of though, just hearing everybody out and are very uncomfortable with sort of making claims about what is a more inclusive, more developed understanding. So it's a very nice transition, though, to where we need to go, right? We're going to hear from everybody and make sure we're not marginalizing groups in our economic system. But we also then have to realize that we do want to honor the more developed understandings.
So the, maybe the context in this last segment, Kevin, we can continue this, but think about the nature of the conversation we've been having on Zoom, that the financial and economic situation, while we've been making some gains, and certainly there's pressures now, are we double-dipping in recession, but certainly there we have some longer-term views and needs and challenges coming. Maybe think about in that context, relative to how a leader, how an agent for change, how someone in this realm might actually bridge to the future in ways that get beyond some of this polarity. What's your thinking? How would that actually look? What would that look like? What's your vision of that?
Yeah, well, there's no shortage of things that need to be addressed with the imbalances that we have in our economy, the environmental liabilities, the financial liabilities, the huge federal deficits, the need for a more cohesive international economic system. So there's a distinction here between the cultural changes and the societal changes. So we're talking more about the cultural changes here that we can do, and that should lead us to implementing these things institutionally. So right now we're talking about the cultural standpoint, and so thankfully there's this new emergent level of evolution that the developmental psychologists are telling us about that is innovative and revolutionary in the sense that this stage really can resonate with all the previous stages. We have these stages at odds in a cultural war now, but at the next stage, going to the next stage is in part reconciling one's own levels of being one's instinct, one's heart and emotions, and one's reason, right? Integrating these things for a synthesis and a full human outlook. And so this is a very mature development. These kinds of values are expressing oneself, but in a way that all can benefit, not just oneself. And working, it sounds very scientific, working for valid information, free and informed choice, commitment to the choice with monitoring and implementation to detect and correct error. Those are the action strategies according to Argyris and O'Connor. So this means being open to how our decisions are affecting our outcomes and being open to change. And that's not just a cognitive event. That's actually being open with our ego and being able to acknowledge how our own behaviors affect these outcomes.
So I'm hearing then that as I was ending the last segment talking about translation, part of this is understanding the resonant field that different individuals actually rest in, sort of the platform of thinking, but you're really intersecting two things here. There's the developmental side of it, and then there's the side of actually being able to deal and start to embrace those where they are and try to make the bridges. Is that sort of the realm of thought that you're bringing to the table here too?
That's right. It's not one group at fault. It's all groups play a role, and that's true for our stakeholder groups. It's true for these stages of development. And so, it's really important not to be elitist here. Actually, we need healthy expressions of folks at whatever stage they're at. So that traditional stage, let's listen to them, and how are they not fitting into the industrial stage very well. They want to talk about sacrificing for the future, and we'll just, our culture needs to demand that means our future is everyone's future, not just a particular ethnocentric group. But in a healthy culture, that becomes a new tradition, a new moral code. Right? If you grow up and you're at the traditional, conventional stage, and you can recognize that our conventions and our morals are supposed to be about environmental stewardship and treating all races with equal respect, that is a new moral code. The new conventional traditional stage doesn't have to be ethnocentric intrinsically. It just is an appropriate level associated with an understanding that's associated with making sense of the world in terms of their group interactions. And so if those group interactions are healthy, so will that stage. And so at this next stage, the rational stage, it's not just survival of the fittest, not just dominating one's marketplace, because that's sort of what our culture is, right? Anything goes. As long as you're succeeding as a business, that's okay. It's somebody else's responsibility to regulate you. But the problem is, it's also looks like we say it's okay to lobby the government to not be regulated, right? So that has to be a new cultural understanding, a new moral code that you're going to be providing a good service and you should be rewarded for that. But culturally, we believe that each stakeholder group should be acting responsibly, right? And this is what the folks at the integral stage or this new stage really understand intuitively, that this is the result of following these guiding strategies and these values.
So what I'm hearing here is a couple of things, one of which is that it's important within whatever stage, whatever sort of orientation, traditional, achiever, and rational, whatever you are, it's to begin to consider the healthiness of that and the ground bed of that and how that needs to connect with others. And perhaps, and you keep using this through line of openness here, but how that openness needs to then begin to make those bridges across it, while at the same time there are some views that are much more easily integratable. Is that kind of where we're coming, Kevin? And I hear the music in the backdrop. Maybe I'll give you the final kind of thought as we begin to wind down here today.
Yeah, sure. Well, thank you. And it's just natural then, if we're operating from these higher values, that this will provide us with instincts about how to make these changes in our societal institutions. If we believe in science, we believe in monitoring, detecting for error, I think our society would tend to move towards following the recommendation of these independent commissions more often. These independent commissions often come up with really good stuff, and then the political system distorts them. right? So there are actually more the practical things we could talk about, too, to embedding these cultural changes.
So I think, Kevin, I think you've laid a good platform. We've started with the notion of the financial crisis. We've talked about the political, but with the cultural underpinning of this, the developmental side, the valuing side, the openness. And I appreciate that, Kevin. Great to have you with us on here today. I look forward to continuing this conversation with you.
Thanks so much for having me, John.
Yeah, and folks, I think what Kevin has likewise done here is this through line of openness. It's really pointing to the fact that the future, the new world, the new human, the new leader in that has a sense of porous and a porosity, an openness, a flow of recognition of what is going on, how do we need to engage. But that's not only how do I engage with my group, how do we connect to others. That's part of our continuing conversation on Zoom. I think Kevin's given us a good look at the financial side and how the cultural pieces intersect with that, the polarities and bridging those. That's the nature of leadership. That's the nature of our conversation. So continue. Have a great week, folks. Great to be back with you. We'll continue this conversation in many more forms coming up, both technical and in up close and personal. Great to be with you. Have a good week. Enjoy. Thanks.
Thank you again for listening to Zoomed Leadership with host John Schmidt. Please be sure to join us again next Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. And have a terrific week.